Professor Dimity Pond is an academic general practitioner. She's Professor of General Practice at the University of Newcastle. Dementia is an increasingly common condition in our community. This article in the AFP considers management of this disease. Professor Pond, can you tell us how widespread dementia is?
Okay, well, that is an interesting question. In the general population, about 10% of people aged 75 and over have dementia. Perhaps more, well, certainly more in residential aged care than in the community. So on average, 10% of people. But there may be subgroups where dementia is more common. So that certainly applies to people who've got risk factors such as stroke or TIAs, head injuries, substance abuse, and other risk factors. Indigenous populations, for example, have around about a 30% incidence, or just under 30%, of over 65s with dementia. And we're looking at 75,000 new cases a year, approximately, at the moment.
Professor Pond, now some people may take the view that diagnosing dementia or an early diagnosis of dementia may not actually be of benefit to the patient. What is your response to that concern?
Well, yes, I can see that. Certainly, it's a very confronting diagnosis, and not everybody wants to know. And people with dementia may not actually have insight into how difficult it is for their families to be supporting them when they've got dementia. It's part of the disease that they lose that insight. There's a term for that, anosognosia. So they may sit and tell you that everything's fine. And how would you know any better as a GP, unless you happen to know some family members? So one of the good reasons to make the diagnosis is that the family may well appreciate it, because they may be able to access support that they need once that diagnosis is made. Another reason is that the person themselves can then plan for the future, organise their will, their power of attorney, make plans for health guardianship, and these things require that person to be competent, mentally competent to do so. And so it's better if they actually do that before dementia, which, as we know, follows a declining course, before they actually lose the capacity to make those plans.
So if the decision to diagnose is made, how might a GP identify people with dementia?
Well, it's not a simple diagnosis to make. I think it's good to have evidence of some sort of problem. It might be a memory problem. Most GPs are well aware of that. But sometimes people don't so much present with a memory problem as with some changes in their emotional control, being on a short fuse, becoming anxious or very depressed. They may be signs of dementia. Or it might be executive function that goes. So I have a patient who complains to me that it's now taking an hour and a half to prepare the evening meal, whereas in the past she could get it all together very quickly. So the sort of planning and action sort of functions may be the ones that go first. Then a GP might consider doing a cognitive function test, and there's a number of those available. They're run through in the article. You can access the Dementia Outcomes Measurement Suite, the DOM suite, on the net if you want to look at which one might be best for your patient. But you have to be aware that those are screening instruments and they need to be taken in context. They're not really diagnostic. And then, of course, we can refer to a geriatrician or psychogeriatrician or a physician such as a neurologist with an interest in dementia. It's best to go with someone who's got an interest in dementia for that final diagnosis.
You made the point there that there were a few screening tools or clinical judgments that a GP could make. Obviously, there are several conditions that could produce cognitive decline, and in the article you go into those and you also touch on further assessment. What would your advice be to GPs on what we should know about further assessment of someone with cognitive decline?
And that's a very good question. Thank you, Sophie. So I always think of 4 Ds. It's hard to remember a whole list of differential diagnoses in a clinical scenario. So 4 Ds is easy. Dementia. A drug side effect can mimic dementia. And it may be that night sedation the person has been on for 20 years without any side effects is now affecting them cognitively as their brain ages. Or it might be that you've inadvertently added a drug with an anticholinergic effect, such as something for urinary incontinence, and that's affecting the cognition. Sometimes a pharmacy review, a home medications review, might help uncover that, or you could have a look through yourself at the medications and have a think about that. So drugs, dementia, drugs. Depression can mimic dementia. I think it's worth thinking about depression in older people. It's often a rather sort of withdrawn effect rather than overtly sad. And perhaps a geriatric depression scale, which is widely available on the net and on some practice software, might be helpful to make that diagnosis. And then lastly, but not least, delirium from, for example, an acute infection, such as a urinary tract infection, or from constipation, or from deranged electrolytes because of either, you know, the hot weather or the diuretic or the antihypertensive that you've got the person on. All of these things can cause delirium, and that may mimic dementia, but it's usually got a shorter onset and a more dramatic presentation.
Well, thank you for that, Professor Pond. I agree an acronym is sometimes worth its weight in gold, and 4Ds is certainly easy to remember. Some of our listeners may want to have the luxury of a geriatrician at their beck and call, but distance and other access issues might make it difficult for a number of our patients in which this diagnosis is in question to be referred to a geriatrician. When would you recommend that a specialist service should definitely be considered?
That's a very good question, and it's so true that specialist dementia services, even in the city, can, you know, have quite a long waiting list, and certainly in rural areas may be difficult to access. So I think if their diagnosis is fairly black and white and you've considered those 4 Ds, and the person, the carers are comfortable with managing the person, and or perhaps they're already in residential aged care, then or they're very reluctant to be referred, then of course I think we're quite capable as GPs of making that diagnosis. So I'd be focusing on early or sort of grey cases, particularly younger onset. I've talked about people over 75, but there are quite a few people with younger onset dementia, right down into their 20s and 30s. And you need to think about it, or you won't identify it. And those people do need specialist assessment, I think. If there are severe behavioural symptoms, then a specialist may be able to help. Another way of getting help for that is through the Dementia Behaviour Management Advisory Service, DBMAS, and there are our phone numbers for that, and they're available in all areas. And then, of course, if someone's got complex comorbidities and you're looking at overall management, a geriatrician might be able to help you. And also, if someone wants to try the anti-dementia drugs, and there have been several Cochrane reviews that show that some people do respond to these drugs, and they may slow down the decline and keep people out of the nursing home for significant periods of time, then that does need at least collaboration with a specialist under the PBS in order for those drugs to be prescribed.
Now, as you touched on, there is medication available for Alzheimer's disease only, as I understand it. Could you tell us more about these medications?
That's right, Sophie. There are three drugs that are acetylcholinesterase inhibitors that are available, and then there's one that's called an NMDA glutamate receptor inhibitor antagonist, and that those are the two classes of drugs that are on the market at the moment. They have complex prescribing rules, which you can check in your... I'm not going to say them here because they could change at any minute. But they are around you doing a screening test in the first place, a cognitive function test, and then observing an improvement over a six-month period. And you do need, as I said before, collaboration with a specialist physician in some way. That might be, if they're a long way away, it might be a phone discussion or an email or fax with results, depending on the physician and your arrangements with that person, so that you've got the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. And those drugs are for Alzheimer's disease and not for other forms of dementia, such as vascular dementia.
Thank you. Now, what would your advice be to GPs on the principles of ongoing management of dementia? There seems like there's a lot to think about.
There is, that's true. And I think this is where general practice really has an enormous role to play in this complex chronic disease. And we're looking at a disease that is a terminal illness here. On average, 10 years from first symptoms to death. In the UK, they've looked at how long from first GP diagnosis to death, and that's more like 6 years on average, but it can be much longer. So as with other chronic diseases, we walk with our patients through this difficult time. And I think for GPs out in the community, that's often meant walking with the carers as well, because at some point you'll be making contact with them. So I'd be looking at ongoing monitoring, 3 to 6 monthly, just of the dementia. You might be seeing the person more often with other things. Not just their cognitive function, but also their activities of daily living. So as I said, my patient who is taking a long time to cook meals, at some point will probably not be able to do that anymore, or she may have to simplify the meals down to one standard meal or something like that, and that might be difficult for the family. So monitoring those activities of daily living, are they safe with their money, or are they just handing their purse to the checkout girl at the supermarket? People with dementia are enormously vulnerable. The difficult issue of driving, of course, often falls into our lap. We may be able to refer that on. There are OT assessments that are available, but they often cost money. So we need to think about whether this person is safe to drive. There's advice about getting the will and the power of attorney and the guardianship, health guardianship issues in place. There's working with the carers, support and education, helping them to access services in the community. Sometimes a practice nurse may be the one who knows. It's a rather a complex web of services out there. And I know Alzheimer's Australia would like to see a set of key workers out there that can work with people to access the best possible services. And last but not least, I think it is worth talking to patients about lifestyle factors that may slow down cognitive decline. The long-term evidence isn't in for these yet, but there's been quite a number of randomised controlled trials looking at exercise, socialisation, cognitive training, risk factor reduction, so all the cardiovascular risk factors, blood pressure, cholesterol, weight, all of those, reducing all of those risk factors. All of these seem to have an effect on dementia, including Alzheimer's disease, in slowing down decline or perhaps even improving cognition in some cases, so in the short term at least. And that they are not going to do any harm to our patients. They can only do good. So I think we really do have a role in promoting these for these patients.
Now, finally, I'd like to discuss the prevention of dementia. This may, of course, be of interest to the general population as people age and also to the children of those who are suffering from dementia. Could you tell us more about the growing evidence in this area?
Yes. Well, some of this is what I've just talked about, because they've looked not only at people with early cognitive impairment to find improvements, or early to mild to moderate cognitive impairment, but also the worried well, the people, pre-dementia people. Now, there's less evidence about this, but there certainly is some early evidence that managing cardiovascular risk factors, socialisation, exercise, cognitive training, all of these things are protective against dementia, or mean that you develop this disease later rather than earlier if you've got a predisposition to it. So if someone comes to me and they're worried about their memory, I think this is a very good way to go. You might end up doing a cognitive function test. You might find they score quite normally. You might think, I don't really think you do have a cognitive impairment. But let's get on to the exercise and the social engagement. If there's a bit of depression there, it's going to help that too. If there are drug side effects, of course, you might want to look at those. But focusing on these lifestyle factors, as I say, can only do good. And there's growing evidence that they might prevent or at least delay the onset of cognitive impairment. So I'm certainly trying to do my 3 hours of exercise a week, I must say, since I've started reading up on all of this.
Well, that's very interesting. Thank you very much for that discussion, Professor Pond. Now, for more information and including helpful national resources, please refer to Dementia and Update on Management, and that's one of our December 2012 focus articles on the elderly.